This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 23rd of November 2015 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week is the first of four special episodes. We're broadcasting over the next month. Armed with my crystal ball, I'll be leading you through the music, films, TV shows and art exhibitions to keep on your radar for 2016, with a little help, of course, from some friends. We're going to get the ball rolling with a guide to the year ahead on the silver screen. Will we be marvelling at superheroes still? Which of the many sequels coming out will be the best? Perhaps Independence Day, Resurgence or Zoolander 2? Surely not the new Bridget Jones, or maybe it will be. Plus, we'll head to London's Bertha Dockhouse to hear which documentaries will be keeping us informed and intrigued, and we'll discuss the upcoming awards season. Might Leo do it this time? Who knows? Well, maybe our guests will. They are film critic Karen Krizanovich and critic for the Daily Telegraph, Tim Robey. So stay tuned as we go to the pictures in this week's edition of Culture with Robert Bound on Monocle 24. And welcome both. Sorry for the slightly stumbling introduction there. Thanks for laughing all the way
through.
We'll
try and stumble through.
No, that's good.
We'll stay.
Yeah. Well, you don't have anything written down. You see, that's sometimes the thing. When something's written down, suddenly the words will rearrange themselves on the page. I don't know quite what that is. It starts becoming a crossword when all it is a script. Welcome, by the way. Karen's just literally wheezing into her microphone, not in a bad way, not in an unhealthy way.
Trying kind not of to breathe.
Jumping up and down with laughter way. We've got some clips of some of the movies we're looking forward to next year, and we're going to, as discussed in the introduction, we're going to talk about things we're looking forward to, genres, films, actors, awards season. Karen, ladies first, what are we looking forward to? What is at the top of your list for 2016? What can you not wait to sit on your seat and go and watch?
Well, I have to say that every time I look at a list of upcoming films, I always think, oh, yeah, look at this. Good. And then there's always one that just comes from nowhere that seems to get a release date changed or I wasn't aware of. So always my predictions for the next year seem to miss out the things that I end up at the end of the year really liking. I don't know why that is. I'm not Tim Robey, so, you know, this is what happens.
Luckily, I'm here.
Luckily, someone.
Thank heavens,
there he is.
Here.
He reveals himself.
But there are five films I'm really looking forward to out of the ones I've gleaned. The Accountant. Hail Caesar, Zoolander 2, yes, we can argue about this, The Nice Guys, and Ben-Hur are my five to look out
so
for.
So some heavyweight stuff here. Let's talk about The Accountant, presumably more exciting than it sounds. This is Ben Affleck, Anna Kendrick, J.K. Simmons. It's sort of, kind of liking the cast. Tell us about this one, Karen.
Well, this is from a 2011 Blacklist script by Bill Dubuque, who did The Judge, which was an interesting script, not without flaws. It centers on an accountant who moonlights as an assassin. Now, there is The Nice Guys as well, which is also an accountant story. So there's a trend of accountant stories in 2016. I think J.K. Simmons, of course, is always wonderful to watch. Anna Kendrick, she's always terrific. Ben Affleck, you take him or leave him if you like. Directed by Gavin O'Connor, who also did Warrior. And I think that this sounds, with a collection, that kind of pedigree, I think it looks quite promising.
Tim, what do you think? Thinking about The Accountant, is one of those things where it sounds, obviously, by the sort of cast, crew, the way that Karen's explained it as well, that it must obviously be more than the sum of its parts. When you see the bare bones of a movie like that, when you sort of see who's involved in it, the production company it's from, and all the rest of it, as a critic, what's it spark off in your mind?
Well, the thing it makes me think of first is I just feel Gavin O'Connor is really having a tough time of it. He's managed to make that film while also making Jane Got a Gun, which has not even been released yet,
right,
which is the Natalie Portman Western, which has been very long delayed, much recast, reshot, held up for bankruptcy reasons and all kinds of things. I think that's eventually supposed to be coming out in February, and I'm still kind of intrigued by it. And that sort of leads me into a theme that I'm interested in next year, which is the revival of the Western. There are actually a lot of them. Because you've got Tarantino's The Hateful Eight in January. You have The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio making his big Oscar bid, also January, I think. And there's also a remake of The Magnificent Seven on the way with Denzel Washington, Ethan Hawke, and Chris Pratt. And best of all, one I've actually seen because it was in the London Film Festival, but which is out in February, is a film called Bone Tomahawk.
Good evening. Civilized towns, you look a man direct in the face when you talk to him.
This isn't comfortable.
Well, it's not supposed to be.
There's a situation. Serious.
Mrs. O'Dwyer was abducted.
She is my everything, and those savages have got her. God knows what they're doing to her. Every second that we delay.
It's a Western that kind of transmogrifies into a horror film. So it takes the idea of a white woman being abducted and essentially redeems it from all the kind of generations of racism attached to that idea by making the villains into sort of subhuman ghouls, a bit like Creatures from the Descent or something like that. But it's actually set up so well and so patiently, and it's so well acted. Patrick Wilson and Richard Jenkins are in the cast as well, that it has a real emotional clout that I was not expecting as well. I think it's excellent.
The return of the Western, Karen, this is an interesting one. We often hear this, right? But with the list, the kind of strong-sounding list that Tim's just given us, maybe this year is the one when my dad will finally return to the cinema.
Hopefully it will be. I mean, you could say Mad Max Fury Road is a Western of sorts, right, if you want. So I think every year there's either something with a Western structure or something that was a Western before remade, and then we've got a lot of revisionist Westerns. We're never going to go back to the way it was.
No, you know, indeed.
Where the white people are all the good guys and the black, you know, the red people are the bad people. But yeah, I think it's a wonderful dramatic structure. I think people are interested in twists on this kind of genre, and you get to ride a horse and wear some buckhide, so why not?
Is it one of those genres that people, that it's always tempting for a director to kind of dip their toe into? You can make a statement easily because people are familiar with the tropes of the genre, so you can easily show what you're trying to say by fiddling with them because people are so familiar with the structure and stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can mess with the formula, you can revitalize it, you can bring new elements to it, or you can kind of stick to it in some ways. I mean, when the Coen brothers made True Grit, which was a remake of the John Wayne Western from 1969, they really kept it fairly straight. There was just that slight feminist edge to it by putting Hayley Steinfeld into the middle of the film. But I thought that was quite a traditional film, despite the Coen brothers' kind of antic style. You mentioned Hail Caesar, which I'm so looking forward to, because the trailer for that one, it's their kind of great farcical Hollywood comedy with kind of everyone in it you could possibly imagine. George Clooney's in it, Tilda Swinton's in it, who else is in it?
Scarlett Johansson, Ralph Fiennes.
It looks like it's got as big a cast as the Grand Budapest Hotel, essentially, but it's the Coen brothers at full tilt of kind of comedy. I think George Clooney gets abducted, he's a famous movie star, and they're ransoming him on set or something.
Joss Brolin is the fixer.
That's it, yeah.
So we'll tick off Westerns for the time being then. And let's move over to this, Karen, because I know you were very excited to talk about this one. This is Hail Caesar. Joel and Ethan Coen, talk us through that. We've talked about some of the massive stars in it. What about the plot? What's happening?
I have not seen it yet, but the trailer is amazing. It does look like Barton Fink with more fun.
It sort of looks like Barton Fink meets Big Lebowski.
Exactly.
It?
Yeah. That's exactly right. It's a throwback to the 50s when stars used to go AWOL and people at the studio had to try and keep them in line. Now, we love those kind of stories. Particularly, it gives George Clooney an opportunity to act comic, and he does a great job of it. And it's packed with terrific actors. And, of course, we know the script and the direction is going to be terrific because the Coen brothers are the closest thing that America has to long-term European filmmakers.
What about the Coen brothers, I wonder, kind of influences the cast and the way they act, the way that they want to kind of fulfill the Coen brothers' wishes? Do you know what I mean? I think it's one of those things, in a way, they kind of remind me of Woody Allen. Everyone wants to be in the movie, whether it's a stinker or not, and they want to act for Woody Allen. They want to act for Joel and Ethan Coen. Is that fair to say? Can you see people putting in a particular sort of performance for these guys?
Yeah, and I'm sometimes a bit skeptical about Clooney doing his kind of mugging comedy routine. Like, Oh Brother, We're Out Now is by no means my favourite Coen brothers film or Clooney performance, and Intolerable Cruelty, I think, there's a bit of a problem as well. He can come across as a bit smug.
Intolerable Cruelty was, yeah.
Yeah, he can come across as a bit smug, and I think they kind of get him to over-egg it somewhat. I tend to like them in a more kind of melancholy, low-key mode, actually, like Inside Llewyn Davis. But this one, just from the trailer, I thought, oh, maybe they've got me here. They might have me with this one. For the first time since The Big Lebowski, I might find one to be consistently, like, really, one of their comedies really funny all the way through. Yeah. I think it's been since that we've had a brilliant comedy by them.
We have Ralph Fiennes on the list, the best comedy performance I've seen in years in Grand Budapest Hotel. And
actually,
so good.
And actually, he's got another film in which he's very funny coming up called A Bigger Splash. Extremely funny. He plays a kind of rock promoter guy.
Okay.
He's just like an absolute shambles, and he's swanning around in Tuscany with Tilda Swinton again and Mattia Skernutz. It's like a four-hander kind of two couples on holiday, and there's a kind of four-way flirtation going on, and Rafe is just ridiculous and outrageous, full frontally nude half the time, just absolutely kind of showboating and going for it, and you've never seen him quite like this.
Sounds
before,
great. Sounds like Joanna Hogg making Sexy Beast.
That's about right. They should put that on the poster, actually. Yeah. That's pretty much bang on, yeah.
Wow. Okay, Karen, let's go down your list. We're going to go from the sublime to the ridiculous, or maybe the other way around. Zoolander 2. What kind of face are we making in the studio while we say that?
Well, I think I'm going to do Magnum because I'm a traditionalist. All right, 2001. You know, it was a different time. I don't like Ben Stiller. I have to say he's funny, but I don't like him. Zoolander, the original, I thought was fresh and funny and pacey. And in fact, I went with my then husband to a honeymoon place. All of the electricity was out. And so we just did the whole movie to each other because I knew it. We loved it so much that we could actually recite the entire movie to each other, which was sad. And we are now divorced. Okay. But
there's a film in that.
It's awful.
But entitled Who's Afraid of Ben Stiller?
One of these films that you don't want to like, but you actually do because it's funny and it's fast. And if you don't like that joke, you'll like the next one.
Yeah.
And the trailer, again, beware of trailers. The trailer looks amazing. We've got Benedict Cumberbatch as a transgender model called All. We've also got Owen Wilson, who's back as Hans. We've got the writer, we've got Justin Theroux, who did Tropic Thunder. Stiller wrote part of some of the script as well. The Muppets Get Him to the Greek, Nick Stoller, and also Little Fuckers, John Hamburg. And I think the script, the writing is going to be very, very important. But we've also got Penelope Cruz and Kristen Wiig, and also Will Ferrell.
You need two words of caution when getting excited about Zoolander 2, and they are Anchorman 2. Basically, aren't they?
This has been germinating a bit longer than Anchorman 2. Anchorman 2 came out pretty quickly. This one is taking longer, which could be bad or could be good, but it also has Will Ferrell as Mugatu. And
I mean, yeah.
I love him.
Should we have a little clip from Zoolander 2? Here we go.
He was once the world's most famous male model. Even his looks were household names. La Tigra, Magnum, and of course, Blue Steel. But that was a long, long, long time ago.
Old LeMay?
Well, there we had it. That was a clip from Zoolander 2. That was one of Karen Krasanovich's picks for 2016. If you just tuned in, she had some other ones as well. Let's not give her slim rations. I'm talking of La Tigra. Tim Robey from the Daily Telegraph is also here, making a beautiful face at me across the desk. Tim, so we've gone through some of Karen's choices here, and we've also talked about westerns, which is one of the themes that you wanted to talk about. Let's go to a couple of your picks, individual picks for 2016. Let's talk about Spotlight. I know this is a film on which you both agree. Talk us through this one.
Yeah, this is good. It's going to be a very strong Oscar contender, I think. It's about the Boston Globe's investigation in the early noughties into Catholic Church sex abuse in Boston. It was a very slow investigation to kind of take off, and they'd actually kind of dropped it a number of times in the 90s, and then they really decided to go for it. And it's an ensemble cast playing the various members of this team. You have Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, and Rachel McAdams in the three principal roles. And a really good supporting cast of people playing other non-journalists involved in the story. Billy Crudup, for instance, pops up. Paul Guilfoyle is good in it. It's extremely solidly constructed. It feels very kind of classical, and it kind of just tells its story very well and gives you a decent insight into the way a newsroom operates like that. There are little touches of, I think, Hollywood kind of cheese, corn, whatever you want to call it, here and there. Mark Ruffalo does an awful lot of running. It's like,
really?
You know, this is meant to have been taking a place over a couple of years, and he's just sort of sprinting all the time to get there, just in time to get the file from the person who can take it to the guy. And there's just a little bit too much of that for me, which I think docks it from like greatness, but it is like exceptionally good. Let's put it that way.
Well, let's have a little taste here. We've got a little clip. This is Spotlight.
I'm hoping we can keep this between us until we all get on the same page.
Is that why we're here, to get on the same page? We've got two stories here. A story about degenerate clergy and a story about a bunch of lawyers turning child abuse into a cottage industry. Which story do you want us to write? Because we're writing one of them.
Okay, exciting stuff. That is Spotlight, one of Tim Robey's picks, and Karen Krasanovich's picks, I think, for 2016. Now, we are all people that kind of know what a newsroom is like, working in various things. Now, you know, the stuff that we deal in is not the kind of stuff that the Catholic sex scandal that rocked Boston and what this film is about. But how well do you think it portrays the stuff of news, you know, the stuff of workaday newspaper kind of office politics and that kind of thing. Because that's always a funny one for films as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the cast really breathed life into it. Rachel McAdams is excellent at this, actually. I think she has a real kind of natural intelligence as an actress. The one thing is, I feel as though to make the story more dramatically kind of powerful, they have to sort of make a lot of the people involved seem surprised by these revelations and seem shocked. And they come across ever so slightly naive to me. I still think the film exaggerates the degree to which they had no idea. They had no idea of the extent of it. And almost every scene is like, what, you're telling me there are 99 of these guys? And I'm not spoiling it, but there's a sequence at the end where they're amazed by the number of phone calls that they get coming in. And I just feel, come on, guys, you're journalists, you're cynical. You know this shit's going on. And I think there's a lack of cynicism to the movie, which I think will actually in some ways help it as an awards film. People don't like cynicism.
You think that might be written in a bit to mirror the potential ignorance of the viewer, or the ignorance of the facts the viewer will come to the cinema.
Possibly.
Maybe, right?
Possibly. I think if there's one category of people who would be quite cynical and sort of unsurprisable by some of these revelations, it would be, you know, career journalists, but perhaps I'm wrong.
Well, that brings us to the end. We did want to talk about superheroes. We'll just have to do that. I think each of you will get a one-word answer to this one. I'll start with Karen. Are superheroes going to reign supreme again in 2016 as they have done in 2015?
Yes.
Ish. Against each other. I don't know. Yeah.
Tim Robey will not be drawn on that one. Okay, so we skipped our way merrily through some pretty fantastic sounding films. Now we're nipping over to the Bertha Dock House in London's Bloomsbury to meet their programming manager, Chloe Traynor. Which documentaries is she looking forward to seeing in 2016, we wondered?
This is a little psychologically overwhelming. Makes me wonder exactly what I'm maybe facing here.
In January, we have The Visit, an Alien Encounter. And this is a new film from Michael Madsen, which follows on from his 2010 film Into Eternity. So The Visit, an Alien Encounter is a hypothetical future encounter with aliens coming to Earth. Throughout the film, you hear from real-life experts about their reaction to the visit, and it explores every aspect of the scenario, raising questions such as how do aliens think, do they understand good and evil, and ultimately would they want to stay here on Earth if they do come and join us?
The longer we don't know, the greater the fear of our people.
It's paired with beautiful landscape shots, kind of from what their perspective would be if they had come to Earth. And it's a dreamlike film with an enchanting and hypnotic quality.
I can feel that my pulse is slightly elevated.
Do we talk about parts of ourselves that we're not very proud of?
It's an interrogation.
There is something else.
Okay, you guys. Is everybody ready?
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
Then moving on to February, we have Janice, Little Girl Blue. So this is part of a wave of music documentaries that are coming out, which are kind of charting the lives of musical icons. And it's got incredible access to the personal archive, as well as a voiceover from Cat Power. And it kind of captures the essence of Janice Joplin.
Janice was fearless with her pain and with her truth.
Worked hard all my life.
So fans of Janice will enjoy reliving her powerful stage presence, but the film also unearths the darker side of her life and her struggles with loneliness and addiction, which ultimately led to her death at the age of 27. It kind of takes you on a very big journey throughout her life and definitely pulls on the heartstrings along the way.
Won't you buy me a Mercedes?
Next up, The Pearl Button is coming out in March.
Mirando las estrellas, me atrajo la importancia del agua.
It's been playing really well to film festival audiences throughout the year, and it will be coming to UK cinemas in March. It's a new documentary from Chilean master Patricio Guzman, and he also directed the beautiful Nostalgia for the Light in 2010. So it's a very unique film. It utilises Guzman's kind of poetic storytelling style to explore the history of the indigenous people of Chilean Patagonia, their relationship to the Pacific Ocean and the devastation of their genocide. And it really deserves to be seen on the big screen, and The Pearl Button will definitely stick with audiences long after they've seen it.
Malte.
And then finally, Where to Invade Next. So So this film was a bit of a surprise when Toronto International Film Festival announced that they would be premiering it in September. It's a new film from Michael Moore, and he had been making it in secret for 6 years. So the film sees Moore traveling the world.
USA! Yeah!
And hypothetically invading countries and stealing all of their good ideas along the way to kind of take back and improve his own country, which is America. Obviously, he made Bowling for Columbine and Fahrenheit 9/11, and it's a very highly anticipated film.
I'm going to just plant the American flag right here in your living room. Is that okay?
You're listening to our look ahead to film in 2016 on The Culture Show here on Monocle 24. I'm joined by film critics Karen Krasanovich and Tim Robey. We're going to have a quick break, but when we're back, we'll be warming up the red carpet when we discuss awards season next year. Stay tuned.
Travel in comfort with the help of the Monocle Shop. It's the place to select the best bags, passport wallets, travel guides, and, of course, the latest issue of the magazine to entertain you on your lounger. We have a great lineup of special collaboration bags with Porter in Japan, including the new Overnighter bag, ideal for a city weekend trip. And then there's the limited edition Remova multi-wheel, made from lightweight polycarbonate in a special Monocle edition. Visit our stores in London, New York, Toronto, Singapore, Tokyo, and Hong Kong, or shop online at monocle.com. Be the one turning heads at the luggage carousel.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Band. Today, we're looking ahead to film releases in 2016, and I'm joined by two experts in the field, Karen Krasanovich and Tim Robey. We've just been through your potential highlights in next year's calendar. Let's move now on to the awards season. The beginning of the year is always exciting at the cinema as directors rush to get their films released in time to be considered for the Oscars. So let's start with the biggie, Best Picture. What are we looking at here, Karen?
Well, I like to look at to see what the bookies think, you know, because they make money on this and, you know, my career just rests on it. So, and also it's very different judging it from the UK or from anywhere else in the world. But when you're in LA, it's a different animal. So I'm going by a sort of, it's an more of an American list. Spotlight.
As previously discussed.
As previously discussed. The Revenant. As previously discussed, Room, which is not previously discussed. Actually.
Okay, so let's deal with this one, Room.
So this is based on a novel that was Booker shortlisted in 2011 by Emma Donoghue. It's a very interesting and quite disturbing book, narrated by a five-year-old boy who has been brought up entirely in prison, in a sort of homemade prison, essentially, in a garden shed. His mother has raised him there because she was abducted when she was 18 years old by this sex offender, and they're actually stuck there for the majority of the book. It's been adapted by the novelist and directed by the excellent Lenny Abrahamson, the Irish director who made Frank and What Richard Did, and it stars Brie Larson in a role which I think could well win her Best Actress. Actually, she's really good. I think she would have narrowly missed out being nominated a couple of years ago for Short Term 12, and it's a year where, you know, the other candidates like Cate Blanchett and Carol perhaps won so recently, they might not give it to her again. Jennifer Lawrence has also won recently. And the other kind of big performances from actresses, I think, maybe won't dislodge Brie Larson as the favourite. She's certainly the bookie's favourite at the moment. And I think the film is really strong. I had a few reservations with it, but they weren't really to do with her performance.
Okay, so that's it. We've got from Spotlight and Room, then we've got two quite issue-y based, two kind of probably heaviosity ensues in those two movies. And then The Revenant, I mean, it's as you say, it's a revisionist Western. It's something quite different, but it's proper drama, I suppose. There's some old-fashioned drama.
And it looks kind of brutal and uncompromising and kind of very high-powered and quite sort of stylistically bold, as you'd expect from Iñárritu. He's pushing the boat out even more after Birdman. Can he have, you know, reach Oscar glory twice in a row? It seems unlikely. That doesn't very often happen, but you never know. It's a kind of a wide open year. And like you, I do check the bookies, and I sometimes even place bets. Last year, I could have told you the second I saw it that Julianne Moore was going to win for Still Alice. Really, it was just, I just thought it was a dead cert. This year, there are very few dead certs, so I haven't put a bet on anything.
How did you know? Just your waters?
I saw it in Toronto, and I was like, well, there's no way anyone's going to be there.
I thought the same for Eddie Redmayne. For
this. Right, there we go.
Well, maybe you just know. I just thought she's still too pretty, but never mind.
Well, let's move on to actors and actresses then. Has anyone got this year sewn up, do you think? Let's start with actresses, Tim. What other sort of notable performances are we looking at?
Yeah, so there's Rooney Mara in Carol. I think she's been campaigned for supporting, which is a bit ridiculous because really she and Cate Blanchett have a very similar amount of screen time in the film. But it's like what they did with Brokeback Mountain, where Heath Ledger was kind of somehow assumed to be the lead and Jake Gyllenhaal was a supporting actor. They often sort of fiddle it that way to guarantee themselves two nominations, but it just doesn't make any sense. It's actually not since Thelma and Louise. This is very geeky Oscar trivia, but that was the last time.
Little klaxon's gone off somewhere.
That was the last time that two actors of the same gender were allowed to be nominated in the same category for the same film. It just doesn't happen.
Fantastic. Right.
And it should happen. It's ridiculous.
And I'm glad it happened for a film like Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
Karen, who have you got your eyes on actor-wise?
Everybody was talking about Michael Fassbender in Steve Jobs. Now, yes, it's a good performance.
M-Fass, I see in your notes.
M-Fass. Yeah. M-Fass, J-Law and M-Fass.
M-Fass, didn't know this, but anyway, sorry.
No, I made that up.
Yeah, it's good.
And everybody's saying Leonardo DiCaprio, because there's been a huge number of memes online where, you know, he's lost the Oscar again and again
He gets all this stuff about having lost, you know, poor old Peter O'Toole never won an Oscar out of eight. Richard Burton, seven. You know, Glenn Close has had six. None of them have won.
Yeah,
and
right.
Yet Leonardo is somehow assumed to be this massively overdue legend of the screen. I'm like, no, come on, be better in more things.
Well, you know, the people that think that Quentin Tarantino...
and we'll get the t-shirts printed ASAP with that written on.
This is by people that think that Quentin Tarantino invented the movie camera. So, you know, I don't feel too bad about this. I think when you can get your hands on films very easily, I think that you have more opinions and the opinions get more disseminated. So we have Matt Damon for The Martian. We've got Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl. Frankly, I think that Alicia Vikander did a better job than he did on this. So the bookies, my list here of Michael Fassbender, Leonardo, and Eddie, I would say no. Matt Damon, people are going, no, but it's good. Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp in Black Mass could be an interesting one. Yeah, I doubt he would win, but it is certainly an interesting and kind of quite bizarre performance. Mm-hmm. His role is Whitey Bulger, the Boston gangster, and he's under this heavy prosthetic job, and he's really quite sinister, and he plays him like a kind of serpent. I think it's a good performance. I actually think there's better work in that film from other actors too. Joel Edgerton is really great in it, and he's kind of the main character actually, and some really good support too. I'd love to see, we mentioned Brooklyn a minute ago, which I think could be a bit of a dark horse in the Oscar race, because it's got a lot of kind of romantic sweep to it and a sort of certain nostalgia value, which I think is the sort of stuff that they go for. But as well as Saoirse, I think it's fairly guaranteed to be nominated. I would love to see Emery Cohen get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I thought he was completely great in it, and they had such good chemistry. And I mean, it's very difficult to be the kind of believable romantic lead in that kind of context and actually not seem as though you're trying too hard or not be a bit insufferable. I thought he was completely delightful.
He was believable because he was shorter than she was. Yeah. That's what I thought. I thought, wait a minute, this is like real life. He's shorter.
It's
great.
It's properly adorable. Their relationship is lovely, yeah.
I am looking forward to seeing that one. And not insufferable is truly not a insufferable, poster quote made in movie heaven. I think we've come to the end of our time here on our look back at 2015 and our look ahead to 2016. We managed to, by hook and by crook, get all sorts of different names, all sorts of different genres. I can't wait to get locked into a cinema somewhere and just have all of this stuff.
We'll literally lock you. You're not coming out.
I didn't realise my guests hated being on the show so much. There we go. Thank you both, Tim Robey from The Daily Telegraph and Karen Krasanovich from all sorts of wonderful corners of film criticism.
I got a lot of corners, but I'm not the king of the double negative like Tim.
Okay, people will be rewinding this program to find the double negative.
Not insufferable. What else was there?
It's the Tim Robey double negative drinking game. Soon to hit.
I will always win it.
Every pub, a pub near you. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was the blockbusting Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week when we'll be picking out the 2016 albums you need to pre-order now. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in. We'll